kick, a cut, and a cough. And it's the, I wanted to bring in the three elements of small things that seem insignificant that really made such a massive difference in this story. Because if he hadn't been kicked by a stablemate and hadn't opened up that cough or that that cut, then, you know, he wouldn't have had this near-death experience, which allowed him to have the layoff, which I think played a lot into why he was able to do as well as he did in the Derby and other places like that. And then the cough plays into, you know, the Belmont and that, like, funny circumstance of it takes the smallest thing to, you know, change history. So I just like to, because the first couple of times I did this, people were like, that's a weird title for a presentation. And I couldn't resist. I wanted to intrigue people. So I hope that was an intriguing way to get people into the story.
It certainly did me. And what was it about Sir Barton? I mean, this is a 5.5-year project that you did in researching and all the way to putting out the book. What was it about Sir Barton that captured your initial interest?
Well, you know, at the very first, it was the fact that he was the first Triple Crown winner and the 100th anniversary was coming up. And as a horse racing fan, the Triple Crown has always been the thing that I truly enjoyed. Like, that's what got me into the sport growing up where I did, not being accessible to racing and whatnot. You know, the Triple Crown was the only thing you really saw on television. So I wanted to know more about this horse, but I knew, based on my, you know, years of collecting books and whatnot, I hadn't seen a book about him. And after studying literature and history to some extent over these years, I know how easy it is to create a narrative that is supposedly based on fact, but in reality often evolves to be based on perception. And so the story that we get, if you read any book on the Triple Crown and it has a chapter, you would get the same story over and over again. And as a historian and as an academic, that always leads me to think that there's something being obscured or something being lost. And so why not, you know, explore that in more depth? And when I started doing the research, I discovered indeed the story that I had been told as a child and now as an adult is not actually the story.
Right, and losing the match race to Man of War, that obviously colored everything. Yes. Before and after.
Yeah, the match race did a lot because, you know, Man of War was such a juggernaut at the time. It's, if you think of Secretariat and how overwhelming he was, and you think of Sham, the horse that ran second to him in the Derby and the Preakness, you know, Secretariat by far eclipses Sham in terms of reputation and in terms of how we think of him historically, even though Sham was a good horse. And the same with Sir Barton. He had done all these wonderful things, but once Man of War came along, he just eclipsed all the other horses. And even Exterminator and other horses that we know of now as Hall of Famers and you know, clearly horses of merit, you know, they were just obscured by him completely. So I found it, it was a logical circumstance that Sir Barton's reputation was diminished because of what Man of War brought. And I mean, certainly you can respect the narrative that grew up around Man of War, but, you know, part of my job as the writer is to make Sir Barton's story shine even in parallel with something as overwhelming as Man of War.
And the fact that we were talking before your presentation, the average Lexingtonian drives on Sir Barton Way and Man of War Boulevard, right, but they don't know really much beyond that.
Right, and that's one of the great things about, you know, what I do and what Dorothy Ars did when she wrote her book on Man of War is that we're able to capture these stories in their context, but in a way that brings them to people of this context, so you can see all the bit players that went into it, and you can see, you know, why these stories matter. Why is there a Man of War Boulevard? Why is there a Sir Barton Way? Like, we want our stories to let the horses shine again so that you can look at those names up in those placards and really understand why they're there and why they're celebrated the way they are.
The final question, now to wrap up your presentation, you showed the headlines of the newspapers, right, and how things had changed from 1919 to 2019.
Right.
And I'm going to have a follow-up, but talk a little bit about that first.
How it's changed. Oh, it's the evolution is amazing. As part of the epilogue, I went through and tracked like the evolution of the Triple Crown. I couldn't do it in as much depth as I would have liked because of space, obviously. But it is so interesting to watch how, you know, we talked about it in 1919 and then in 1930 and the 40s and onward, and to see this it just grow and import to the point where, you know, when Pharaoh did it in 2015, it you know, elicits this visceral response that, you know, continued in 2018 as well, that to this day, you know, me and I'm sure a ton of other people look at Pharaoh and look at Justify and they're just brought to tears by these experiences. And I just love looking at what Sir Barton did and looking at everyone's attitude toward it then and looking at it now and just really appreciating why we do what we do. You know, why do we celebrate Pharaoh? Why do we celebrate Justify? Why do we, you know, put all these people in Churchill Downs on the first Saturday of May and endure 150,000 people in the same space? Because all this stuff is, you know, uniquely American and uniquely part of our identity. So we really need to know not only where it came from, but also, you know, celebrate it at the same time.
Okay. And so my last question would be, what do you see for our industry in 100 years from now?
Well, I hope it's still around. hopefully in 100 years from now, we will still be appreciating all the things that have come before that inform why we do what we do, but we improve on them continually to the point that the average person, even if they don't see a live horse race in a year, they know that the people who are doing all this are passionate about it. From the hot walkers in the morning to the grooms, the trainers, the owners, everyone who's involved with the sport is passionate about it. Even people like me who are on the periphery and don't actually interact with the animals on a regular basis, we love the sport. And I hope 100 years from now that love is even more obvious than it is now and shared by other people too.
Jennifer S. Kelly, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.